One of the biggest things that has been a light bulb moment for me is that happiness and grief coexist together.
Hey, and welcome back to the next episode of the Trail Running Women podcast. I just like ran upstairs because I had some time to record this, and then I started to do the intro and realized I was not going to catch my breath at any time during the introduction, so I had to stop and pause and redo it. And it's too bad because whatever I said, I think it was good. It just sounded very panty. Okay, so today's guest. Now, she actually warned me before we talked because obviously I'm pregnant right now, so the timing of this might feel weird as a listener, but I think it's just such an important conversation, and Melissa is really open, and she was actually recommended, or somebody requested her story. She's really open about grief and loss and late-term loss. So if that is going to not be something you want to listen to today, then maybe just skip this one. And she talks about how running has helped her so much, and running through grief and finding herself, and then raising two daughters, and just everything to do with it, and also big race goals that she's taken on. So lots there. And I think it's just the more people tell their stories about decisions they had to make and things that they go through, the better it is. So I was happy and willing to share this episode because I appreciate that she is doing so much for other people that maybe feel alone or what have you. So I will leave that kind of vague intro there, and you'll understand what I mean when we get into it. Here's Melissa. Earlier this year, I put out an Instagram post for who people wanted to hear from for 2004. And Melissa was one of the first people recommended. And I believe it's because you are so open with your story on pregnancy and loss and running and how all of those have intertwined in your life. So I think a lot of people listening will be able to relate to what you're going to share today. So thanks so much for joining us and welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to having this conversation.
So as we were just chatting a bit before the show, the general outline is kind of your story. And I know you didn't start running seriously until a little bit later in life, but let's back up and find out kind of what your relationship with running was like before 2020 and when you were a kid. And maybe let us know how old you are now too, so we can kind of follow along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm 33 now. I didn't really start getting into running, like you just said, in 2020. So I would have been around 30 years old. Growing up, I was always on the go. But running was definitely not a love of mine back in the day. I was a dancer. I loved ballet. And didn't find running until later in life. And it's honestly been transformational for me. And I talk about that a lot on social media, about how it's brought so much healing and joy into my life. And so that's just my message to everyone moving forward, is that movement for the body is medicine. And that's just the message that I have on my platform for everyone.
So let's get a bit into how you started running and when you started running. And I know for you, it was to kind of help you through a hard time in your life. So maybe I'll let you kind of lead that as much as you want to share. And I know, again, on your Instagram, you're quite open with it, but let's talk about 2020 and your pregnancy and kind of where you were at in that general outline as much as you're willing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll back up a couple of years. I had my first daughter in 2017. And in those like early postpartum days, I went through postpartum depression and just felt very alone in those feelings. And so I decided to do something for myself. And so I signed up for a women's only sprint triathlon that was local here to Calgary. And so I found myself, you know, going outside for 15 minutes a day, jumping on the bike trainer for half an hour a day. And it was just that little sliver of during the day that I could really dedicate to myself. So I went into the sprint triathlon. I had so much fun. And not that long after, I got pregnant with my second daughter and went along. I was really sick. So I was always hoping to be that cool pregnant woman that would like run until I was 40 weeks pregnant. And that just was never my story. My morning sickness was just relentless. The heartburn just felt like my chest was on fire. So I honestly just went for a lot of walks. I did online bar classes. I just kept my body moving, but never really did feel amazing. And then March of 2020 came along. My partner and I went to our 20-week ultrasound to find out if we were having a boy or a girl. It's called an anatomy scan, which we always kind of thought was, well, let's find out the gender of our baby rather than they're looking for all of these, health markers. So we found out that we were having a girl, but then we also found out that she had a very rare and severe heart defect. And so she was born almost a week later after that anatomy scan because she was very sick. And in the middle of her being born is also when the pandemic hit like our area. And so all the gyms were closed. Daycare was closed for my youngest daughter. I didn't have access to any mental health support. And it was lonely for people who were just living a normal life. So it was especially lonely for someone who was just looking to have that mental health support, to even, like, it was frowned upon even just to go to my mom's house for support then, because everything was just so unknown. And so I felt very alone in my grief, and I'm sure my partner can also relate to that. And so, like I mentioned, I was used to going to the pool and going to the gym. I didn't really have like a set routine, but at least I could get out of the house being a mom, you know, 3-4 times a week. And so with everything being closed, I thought, you know, maybe this is the time where I start to take running seriously. So I put on a pair of running shoes, opened the door, and out I went. And I was also newly postpartum. I think that's something that people often forget about, is after loss, miscarriage, you know, stillbirth, is that your body, we're so focused on our minds healing and our grief that we forget that our physical body is also healing. So yeah, I put on a pair of running shoes, went out the door, and I think I was probably pushing like a 6-minute mile because I had no idea what I was doing. I was like, okay, we're just going to go hard because this is what feels good right now. And I don't even think I made it at the mile marker without being completely out of breath. I came back home, and what I felt was this overwhelming feeling of like an out-of-body sensation where things just felt clearer. I could deal with my grief in a more logical sense, I guess. I could, you know, sit down with my journal without being fidgety. I could parent my living daughter without being up in the clouds the whole time. And so that kind of became my new routine, is going out the door for half an hour with like a run walk strategy with whatever felt good. And then on May 20th, on my birthday, is when I found out that I was pregnant with our third child, and she's almost three now. I had to basically go back to square one with the feeling morning sickness, being sick, just taking it easy with my body, listening to my body as I was growing this new baby.
First of all, I'm so sorry that you went through that, and especially during the pandemic. And you're right, like, it's just such a good example of how people judged other people. Like you said, it was frowned upon to go to your mom's, and nobody knows anybody's real story and how careful we have to be with things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned you had this scan, you found out about a heart condition, and a week later she was born. That mm-hmm. is really fast. So did they just give you a decision or tell you what had to be done, kind of thing? And how was the medical system support for you during that time?
Yeah, I am very grateful that we live in a country that allows us to decide what is best for our children and for our families. I was given the option to either have palliative care if she had made it to a 40-week gestation. So she would have been in palliative care for anywhere from immediately from birth. And we were given kind of a 48-hour potential life window. Or I was given the option of a compassionate induction. And so, yeah, we that's just what we had decided as a family, was to go through with a compassionate induction and not have her in physical discomfort for, you know, 24, 48 hours, 20 weeks later.
Yeah, of course. And yeah. I mean, equally, just the weight of getting to 35 weeks and 40 weeks on your own, and people's comments, and having to have that conversation before you're ready, just isn't fair to you either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the medical terminology for that is called a termination for medical reasons. And it's actually more common than stillbirth and SIDS put together.
Wow.
And I think it's the most unspoken about loss. And it's something that I'm trying to, you know, just bring awareness to, because it's not widely accepted in a lot of spaces. And so right. I'm just trying to create a safe space for families and individuals who have experienced loss in that capacity, so that they can talk about their grief in a safe space.
For sure. I have a friend who went through that around the similar mark. I think she was 26 weeks. And I think you're exactly right that there was almost nowhere for her to turn because it wasn't talked about. And then once she found people, realized that, like you said, it was happening more often. And it's such a tricky space to be in mentally. I mean, I can't relate without mm-hmm. actually having been through it. So it's hard to speak to it unless you find other people like you who have and are willing to share. And you also mentioned having some postpartum depression in 2017, which feels recent, but mm-hmm. it's not. So I'm wondering also two things. If you experienced the same type of kind of hormonal postpartum depression after your loss, like when we look at just the physical side of it, maybe it's hard to tell between regular grief and just the hormone mm-hmm. changes. And if there was even an improvement in how we deal with that and support in those 3 years and maybe even to now. Because I think even postpartum depression and having to take medication and things like that haven't been talked about enough compared to where they are now. I feel like we're getting a little bit better, but there's still this stigma.
Yeah. And honestly, looking back now, like knowing what I know now, I don't even think it's because I was afraid of judgment, more so that I didn't recognize the signs of postpartum depression, for one. And I didn't know where to go for help. Like healthcare providers, basically, we see them till 6-ish weeks postpartum, and then we're kind of on our own, right? And I completely agree with you that over the years that postpartum support groups and things like that have definitely evolved, even in the past 6 years since I've had my daughter. And that the conversations, even just on social media, are a lot more open with how people are struggling. I always had this constant feeling that it was Groundhog Day. Like every time that I looked at the clock, it was 6 p.m. I was like, okay, I guess I have to do the exact same thing tomorrow. Like I nursed both my girls till they were two. And so I was like, okay, I guess I'll be cluster feeding again, like all night tonight, and we're doing the same thing tomorrow. And it just felt so repetitive that I'm a person of routine, but it just felt too repetitive with nothing new, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And it's just an adjustment that you're just not used to. And there's so many things going on. I remember feeling all of that as well. And so before we get into your running a little bit, I just want to confirm this happened in March 2020 and you were pregnant again in May of that same year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like 8 weeks later.
Yeah. That must have been a lot where you feel like you're probably still absorbing and understanding what happened. Then there's going to be fear along, probably, that will this pregnancy be better? And you have just found something, even though maybe went out the door a little fast, but that running settled you. And then you're back to feeling sick again, and running possibly becomes a challenge. How did you navigate that?
Yeah, everybody who has experienced pregnancy after loss knows that it is a wild, wild ride, let me tell you. There is so much anxiety and fear, but I am very grateful that I had a lot of counseling support to help me recognize that this was a new story. And it wouldn't be ending the same way. But yeah, that I had to recognize that part of my love for running was also deeply rooted in my love for being outside and connecting with nature and connecting with community. So I had to settle with still wearing my trail shoes, but just going for walks outside. And going out in the trails and going hiking. My daughter at the time loved being in the carrier. So we would go out, you know, for an hour and a half, make little adventures out of it. And it might have not necessarily looked the same, but I really sat down and looked at what are the other elements of it that I really enjoyed.
Right. I think that's actually really smart for everybody who's going through injury or anything, to find what it is about it and use it as best as you can.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't heard that advice. And I ask everybody, if you're in a hard place and running is your stress relief, how do you deal with it? So that's awesome. I love that. I mean, since you started running, it was kind of like, I go outside and I know it makes me feel good. And then your body's going through a lot physically.
and now you have completed 100K and have attempted 100 miler twice. And I mean, that's all pretty quick. So let's get in a bit to your actual running after your youngest daughter was born and kind of what made you decide to go into the really long stuff at that time.
During lockdown and COVID is when I really got pulled into all of the running documentaries in the space. I think that's where Dreams Go to Die came out with the infamous Sparkly marathons. And that's when I saw a photo circulating around, which had Sophie Power nursing her baby at UTMB. And I thought to myself, you know, she's a new mom. Like what is so different between her and I? And I really looked at these people that were running these extremely long distances as, you know, extreme. So I signed up for my first trail marathon. And the start line was 15 minutes from my house. So I thought, perfect. It's not going to be, you know, a huge burden on my family to get out for a few hours. So my training looked like lots of stroller running, power hiking. We went on lots of family hikes. So I towed the start line of that trail marathon. And I think to this day will still remain it's the race that I'm most proud of, I think. I crossed the finish line and I was completely demolished. Like I can still remember my hamstrings just being like completely on fire. Like I had Ireland in January and I ran that in August. The one like common denominator that I'm seeing at all of these races is that yes, I love to run. Yes, I love to race, but I have made so many lifelong friends at all of these events. I met a woman at this 100 mile race, and her and I are going to the Golden Ultra together in September. I also met a gentleman at a 50K who is a paratrooping veteran, and he's coaching me on how to set my goals for 2024. Like the space is just filled with so many cool people, and I think that's just what, in part of my love for running, what just keeps me coming back to all of these community events.
So after this marathon, clearly there's something in you that loves it, like we're talking about now, mm-hmm. and you sign up for 100K and then your 100 milers. And I would like to get into a bit about your training for the 100 milers and what you think didn't work and what you're hoping to improve for next year. But perhaps let's start with what 100K did you do and how did that go?
Yeah. Well, soon after that trail marathon, I did a 50K in October. And so that was kind of my first little toe dip into the ultra space. Absolutely loved it. It was painful physically again. And then shortly after, I thought, hey, you know, why not? I've heard of this incredible race in the Crow's Nest Pass called Sinister 7. And so I signed up for the 100 mile distance for that following July. So training looked like I did a lot of uphill climbing. This particular race has 6,600 meters of elevation gain over the 100 miles. So there's lots and lots of power hiking. So I just needed to get my legs strong for that. And thankfully I had a coach to guide me through that experience because I honestly didn't have the knowledge space to build myself a plan. And it was also very, you know, very flexible, very fluid. I was still nursing my youngest. So I would go out for long runs. I'd whip back home to nurse her. I'd do miles on the treadmill while she was napping. I did a lot of training after my kids went to sleep. So like 7:30, 8 p.m. was typically when I liked to train the most. And I was still on maternity leave. So I am very grateful to have I have a very close relationship with my mother and my sister. And so they did lots of grandma days on those long run days while my partner was working and I could, you know, head out for a few hours in the mountains.
What do you think were, say, the top two things you learned from your two DNFs that you're going to take to your next attempt?
Mm-hmm. The reason I DNF'd my first attempt was because I got lost in the middle of the night.
Oh, God.
And so myself and a group of three other people, we were like wandering around thinking that we were following the correct markers and we had made a wrong turn. So my learning from that is that I had really skimped on my lighting, like my headlamp.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And so all of us had completely run past the like turn left here, like super obvious sign. And so when I left that race, I was like, okay, this is the time to get like a waist light and invest in a good proper headlamp so that I could really light up the trail so that the following year I wouldn't miss any markers. And it seems like a simple one, but it was a make or break for me in that race.
Totally. We talk a lot about experience being something that is so valuable because somebody can tell you, make sure your headlamp is really good, but until you can run early in the morning or kind of till 10 PM or whatever, but until it's 1 AM and it's complete dark and you're alone way out there, you don't totally know what that means for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another learning that came out of that was, why am I not testing my gear at night prior to race day? You know, like it seems so obvious. I did lots of nighttime training, but like you said, it was just right after my kids went to bed. So I would take my headlamp out at 8 p.m. So it was dark, but it wasn't like 1 p.m. in the woods kind of dark. So it makes a difference to really recreate race scenarios. And I'm not saying, you know, take your headlamp out at 1 a.m., but really look at if it's going to get the job done.
Yeah. And do you have batteries? Do you need to charge it? Is it going to die after 6 hours and the night is going to be 12 hours? There are many, many nuances to the headlamp situation. And I talk all the time about how these like rookie mistakes are so easy to make over and over again, almost too. Like it's a funny sport that way.
Mm-hmm.
So other than the headlamp situation, when you got back out there the second time, what do you feel like you learned from that attempt?
Mm-hmm. Attempt number two, I felt my training over last season like was unmatched for me historically. Like I got my training done. I felt so strong. I PR'd my mountain 50K time that day, which I'll take away as a win for myself. One of the things that I did not expect and I did not train for was the heat. And I posted a picture of myself on June 20th, which is, or June 21st, the first day of summer, where I went out to one of our local mountains here. First day of summer, and at the top of the mountain was a massive snowstorm. Like, I had my buff, like, it was absolutely insane. And so heat training just honestly didn't really happen for me last year. And that comes down to like me training after the kids go to bed. Like, it's always cooler. So when I, after, you know, 8, 9, 10 hours of racing that day, is when I started to feel not so great. I couldn't keep any of my nutrition down, started throwing up on the side of the trail. It was just so relentlessly hot. And I had the bonk of a lifetime, honestly, and rolled in at mile 55. It must have been around midnight. Tried to have a cup of noodles and honestly couldn't keep anything down. And I pulled the plug. And so my biggest learning from that is to respect the heat on race day and to really get that heat training in. I thought my body would do okay in the heat, but that's just not enough to get it done right. And
so were these both Sinister Seven?
Yes. Yep.
And are you going back to Sinister Seven this year?
Oh, am I ever. Yeah. The next day we were driving home and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to book the Airbnb for next year just in case I change my mind and I want to get it done. And I think it was, you know, not even a week later and the bib was bought.
Oh, that's so perfect. So this year, we are running out of time quickly here, but this year you are, I imagine, heat training, climbing, getting your gear in check, maybe doing a night run if you can. Anything else you're going to change?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things that I'm trying to focus on for off season is strength training and speed work. One of my biggest strengths is climbing. But one of my biggest weaknesses is running the flats. And as much as there is a lot of climbing in that race, there's a lot of runnable parts. So I'm running the Vancouver Road Marathon in May, so that I can practice going fast on the flat, which is very new and foreign to me. So I'm super excited to try, you know, something new.
You know what? Your turnaround is a little bit different than mine, but I ran the BMO to do the same thing, which is the Vancouver Marathon. And then 100K with exactly the same amount of elevation. It had 6,000 meters, which for our Americans is like just under 20,000 feet. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a huge shift in what you're doing. But if you're a good climber, you can dial in those climbing legs as the last couple of builds of your training program. And it was the best 100K I've ever had. And I think that, like, work on your speed, your different energy systems, your turnover, and then dial in what you're already like naturally good at, I think you're totally set up. So I'm stoked for that.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
So back to kind of tie this whole thing together, do you feel like there's probably no timeline on getting through grief, but are you still feeling like the trails and having these goals kind of helps you stay focused with your two daughters while still like allowing yourself to get through grief? And is it still all sort of a work in progress?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's forever a lifelong journey. One of the biggest things that has been a light bulb moment for me is that happiness and grief coexist together. And as much as I am sad, you know, for lack of a better word, that she isn't physically here with us, that there is so much to live for as well. I have a family here that needs me. I have a life that I can pursue in honor of her. And yeah, the trails will always be a place of healing for me. It'll always be a place where I invite people who are struggling with their own mental health to find solace and community in on the trails, whether that be running or walking or just spending time outside. I think that advocating for those spaces for people who are in those dark spaces will can change someone's life.
Yeah, I think that's beautifully put. And I think that is not obviously just a specific type of grief, but any grief. And I think we're kind of at the age where a lot of people are dealing with sick parents and all sorts of things and the economy and things that are really hard, and that grief can come into many different forms. And I think you put that really well, that they can coexist. And a lot of people probably did need to hear that. So I want to thank you so much for sharing. I know it's probably not easy to revisit these times in your life, but like we mentioned, you do so much on Instagram, and I'm sure you've had people reach out and thank you. And I mean, obviously, because that's why they put you as a guest suggestion. So do you want to take a second to tell everybody where they can find you if they want to reach out or read your posts or anything like that?
Yeah, you can reach me on Instagram at melboisv. So M-E-L-B-O-I-S-V.
Okay, and I will link to that in the show notes as well. And this will come out, like we talked a bit about the show, a little bit later in the year, and you will be probably gearing up real hard for Sinister Seven. It's early July, right?
Yes. Yes, it is.
So we will have a few months to follow along your training, and the best of luck at that race, and I have no doubt you're going to finish it this year.
Thank you so much, and thanks for the opportunity to chat with you.